Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today, as you can already hopefully see, we have an incredible guest that I am not only excited about, but I've been waiting for a long time. So Andy, you don't know this, but I've been praying for you to come on the show for a very long time because your work has been so impactful. And we have Andy Crouch on the show. And all I need to do is say that name. And if you are a person who loves Jesus, you're like, yes, I know Andy. And you probably know him from his books, TechWise Family, another book that we're going to be talking about today, The Life You're Looking For, Reclaiming Relationship in a Technological World. These are just the things you write, but obviously you're still up. Are you still at Praxis? Yes.
I am still, last I checked, I haven't checked my email for about an hour. So
has anyone fired you recently?
Was still letting me in as of an hour ago.
So at Praxis, which I'd love to talk more about, and a musician, which I found out recently, I as well am a musician. So I love that. But welcome, Andy Crouch, to the Intentional Parents Podcast.
Thank you so much, Brooke. Very glad to get to talk today.
Yes. So many things we could talk about. Your latest book, which I'm thrilled about, which we're going to get into in a second, let alone the TechWise family, which has been a huge gift. I wanted to say we more recently met in a big boxed church in, was it Southern California?
Some part of
Southern California.
County of Oranges. Yes.
Were you there? Okay. It started raining at this event. Were you there for that? You remember?
I do remember. Actually. It was torrential. I wouldn't have if you hadn't remembered me, but yes, it was amazing.
Well, it's Southern California. It's supposed to be sunny. And right. There was like this hum. Drenching. It was like this hum coming over and everyone in the room is like, what is that sound? And then they went outside and it was pouring down so hard. So anyway, I was able to meet and thank you for coming on the show. There's so many different things that we could get into. I want to talk about specifically The Life You Were Looking For. What a wonderful book, what a helpful resource in our time. I want to talk about maybe some of the foundation, where some of this emerged, because this was released, if I remember right, is it 2022?
I'm losing track of years. Yes, 2022, spring of 2022.
Somewhere around there.
It was published, yeah.
Yeah. So this had to have been, this was already rolling in your heart before that, mm-hmm. obviously before the release date. And so I would love to hear some of the backstory. Where did this book come from for you? And obviously we'll have a handful of other questions, but would love to hear where kind of the origin story of this particular work came from.
Well, I tend to think about topics for a really long time. And I think about big topics. So I spent like 10 years thinking about like culture and eventually wrote a book called Culture Making. Then I spent like 10 years thinking about power and eventually in the middle of that wrote a couple books about how we handle power. And actually, in some ways, if you like add culture plus power, you kind of have technology, or at least technology is the way our culture acquires and wields power in the most distinctive way. And so it's been about 10 or 15 years that I've been actively trying to think through for myself and for my own family, and then kind of on behalf of the church, the redemptive community of God's mission, In a way, what are we in the midst of in this technological story? And what's going on in our world? And what does it mean? What do we even mean when we say technology? And in the middle of thinking about that, I wrote this book, The TechWise Family, which was a super practical, focused book for people trying to put technology in its proper place in their homes. And I was really glad to do that. And we could talk more about that.
Yes,
but as I finished The TechWise Family, and then my daughter actually wrote a follow-up called My TechWise Life, which is her own take on it as a late teenager when she wrote it, it felt like there were some bigger picture things that didn't fit in that book that that I wanted to try to explore. So this book, The Life We're Looking For, is really an attempt to name what's going on, name what we're facing, name its possibility for good, but also name its potential to really distort and diminish human life. And then kind of alongside it, tell another story that's been going on. It started in another technological empire, the Roman Empire, and comes into our own. It's the story of the church or the community of people following Jesus through these stories, and just kind of put them together. So it's, it was incredibly fun to write. It's very hard to explain. So feel free to try to explain it better than I can. Yeah. But also just ask me questions. There's so many different things in it.
Oh, there absolutely is. No, I can guide the questions. Maybe let's start with, because this kind of seems, obviously it came out second, but obviously this and TechWise Family have a very similar overlap. And so I would say the TechWise Family, let's maybe talk about that for a minute, because I think for so many people, I can't remember where I heard you say this, so I forgive me if you didn't, but I'm pretty sure you did, that you weren't meaning to write, you know, the TechWise Family wasn't meant to be as big as it became. Like, it's kind of become the thing that a lot of people know you for. Yeah, am I correct on that?
Yeah. And well, so, especially a lot of 11-year-olds are going to think of me for the rest of their life as that little red book their parents read and then took away their phones, I think. So, yes, I'm going to be misremembered or remembered. Blamed for it. It was a side project. It was like this little extra thing that I did really want to do, that my friend David Kim and the owner and proprietor of Barna, this really helpful research group, he said, Andy, as we talked to parents, like, this is the number one thing they're talking about, would you help us write something for them? And so we did some research together, and I wrote the kind of the idea part, and they did the research part. But yeah, it's ended up outselling in units everything else I've written. So I just didn't anticipate how hungry people were for help, probably.
I think you hit a nerve. It's a book for the moment. You know, it really is. Mm-hmm. I think you put language to stuff that so many of us as family members are constantly feeling of, like, where do we place all of this new power, you know, and you talk about that a lot. How do we actually engage that with our children? And then really, I think what that book gives more than anything, and I think it gives lots, but one of the things I think it gives, at least to me, I could just say this for myself, it gives me permission. So I really appreciate that you said something from a place of authority or experience of your own life lived. And it gave me permission to go, like, well, you know what? I mean, I don't know Andy, but from a distance, doesn't seem too crazy. And his wife loves him and his kids love him.
The closer you get, the crazier I seem.
It's for the truth for everybody. I mean, that's the closer, never meet your heroes. You know, that whole thing. But truly, I think you gave permission to a lot of people to go, no, I can actually establish some really clear structure. Wow. And even so the 10 tech wise commitments, you know, instead of the 10 commandments. I love those. Those are really helpful. And just even that alone as a structure, it's like, that's permission again to say, no, we can write our own, or, you know, how does it work out for our family?
Yes.
So I just want to say thank you. But I also think that you hit a nerve, and for anyone listening, like, that book specifically has just been so helpful. I know for Elizabeth and I, we kind of from that wrote our own digital rule of life. You know, you have a rule of life, and and that's been so helpful for us. Like, sit down with our kids and say, here's how we interact with technology in our home. This is our, you know, we have a spiritual rule of life is the goal. Let's have a digital one.
Wow.
And so that's been super helpful. And that all comes from that space of permission. What was your, on that book, and we'll move to the other one, but on that topic specifically around the family, What is something that, as you were even writing it, what was your like aha for that book? Or what was something that you were like, as I was studying and rewriting it, I was like, whoa, whether it's something you learned or something you were just really excited to pass on.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world that gives monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10 or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and to see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much. And may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
Well, you know, I had never kind of pushed myself to ask the question I start the book with, which is, what is family for? Like, and I would say, I came up with an answer that I think is at least not wrong. I don't know if there's one right answer to that question, but the not wrong answer that I kind of lay out in the book is that family is for forming persons in wisdom and courage. So this idea of wisdom and courage, that as much as the kind of 10 principles I lay out are kind of 10 ways you can approach technology, I certainly hope that's helpful and seems like it has been to people. In some ways, the deeper question and opportunity that technology poses is to like figure out, what do we really like? Why are we doing this family thing at all? And at one level, it's to, you know, I don't know, propagate the species, whatever. But but it's not that. That's like that would be the mammal answer or the animal answer. But for human beings, what's it for? And I really think it is to make us the kind of persons that we're meant to be in the most intense crucible that exists, which starts with, there's multiple dimensions. There's the crucible of marriage, of being yoked to, in a covenant, to another person, God willing and God helping from the wedding to the end of one of their lives, which is a massively difficult thing to do, even at all, let alone too well. And then you bring these little creatures into it we call babies, and that's its own crucible. But then so is childhood, so is adolescence, so in different ways are later stages in life. My wife and I know our kids are in their 20s, and it's less intense now. And yet I still think in some ways, like the most formative things I do, the things that require most wisdom and courage, or that reveal the limits of my current wisdom and courage, still involve certainly my marriage to Catherine and my parenting of my now adult kids and now our daughter-in-law. For all that there's very practical stuff in it, maybe this reflects also what I get motivated by when I feel like I've, you know, found a treasure hidden in a field that's just a simple, clear idea. And you can say, you know what, ideally everything that would happen in my home would be directed towards greater wisdom and greater courage. And therefore, I should ask, how do we do dinner? You know, could we do it with more wisdom? Could we do it in ways that would encourage us? How do we do our leisure time? Like, what games do we play? What shows do we watch? What music do we make? How do we do rest, you know, so that I wake up and I'm able to absorb wisdom the next day, or, you know, whatever. That idea has just been, I didn't have that before I set out to try to figure out why we did what we did with tech. And we'd sort of just stumbled our way through like everybody does. And that was an exciting kind of a clarifying discovery, I guess.
Yes. I have a follow-up question, but to just respond to what you said, that part to me, family is for the forming of persons. That has stuck out to me so much to be totally fair and clear. There's a teaching that my wife and I do, and we totally rip you. Don't worry, we give you credit.
Oh, please. Oh, but, steal but, it. Take it.
No, I mean, we do give you credit. But at the same time, it's like that phrase has actually opened up so many other things. It's wow. also because really, you know, because family is for the forming of persons. Well, that just like you kind of even teased out, it just gives so much more clarity to what you're trying to even accomplish with your family.
Yeah.
Who, yep. what are you even accomplishing? What is dinner accomplishing? Well, it's you're feeding people, right, but there's so right. many other things.
That's right. That's right.
So yeah, that concept, I just have very much appreciated it. And that's rang true for us. So I was happy that that was the thing that stuck out to you because that's so cool. It's been very powerful. Yeah. Follow-up question. You said, you know, your kids are in a different stage now, adult kids. Mm-hmm. Sounds like one of them is married.
Yes. Our son got married a year ago. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And no kids yet? No, you're not grandparents yet?
I don't know if I'm still employed. I don't know if I have grandkids, but the last communication, there were no grandkids.
So you still have a job. You still don't have grandkids. These are good things to clear. Looking back, because it's always easier to see this stuff, you know, looking back, things that you were happy you did, things you weren't. So my question is, what are you happy that you guys ended up doing, you know, with the idea of TechWise in your home? Yeah. And what's something that you look back and you go, you know, it doesn't even have to be a regret as much as like, I don't think that worked out like we hoped it did. So like what things worked and what things maybe didn't work the way you'd hoped them to?
Great question, man.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
You know, gosh, the things that probably matter most from this distance, having raised Timothy and Amy through their kind of launch into college and beyond for each of them. I'm just glad I will say, by the way, Brooke, most of the things we did that I'm most glad we did were not my idea. And it really was my wife's, in some ways, much healthier baseline instincts for what would be good. And one of the many examples is she really wanted us to spend extended time in the summers on vacation. And this is something my family of origin never really did. We, for a couple of reasons. One is we didn't have very much money. So the idea of paying to go on vacation, it was just not on the table for my family growing up. And then we had far-flung relatives. So we took a lot of trips to see relatives. We spent a lot of time together in my own family of origin. Catherine's family had the means and the instinct to like go away in the summer and just like go to the beach. And these were very modest vacations, but, you know, just rent a little cottage and spend all day kind of at the beach and at the lake. And she said, you know, could we do that? And initially I was like, that costs too much money. And I was like, this is a bourgeois thing to do. This is not something simple, radical, faithful Christians do, is like go on vacation. And she kind of prevailed. And we were living in New England at the time. And the beautiful thing about New England is the state of Maine is relatively close. And it's one of the most glorious places in the U.S. in the summer. The rest of the year, it's a tough place to live, frankly. But boy, in July and August in particular, it's amazing. And we found a way that we could afford to get to Maine first for a week and then very quickly for 2 weeks. And just having that time apart. But I would also say, like, so that was like the every year, like, dramatic reset for the Crouch family. And we really did minimize, we sort of minimized devices all the time, but we definitely, like, Maine was about being outdoors, being together, cooking, reading, napping, you know, anything but like daily work and entertainment. And actually at the other pole, in a way, like the most mundane thing possible, it's actually something I write about in the book. It was the decision that we wouldn't have headphones in the car when we were traveling, when we were driving, even like just short trips to the music lesson or sports practice or whatever. When we got an iPod, our kids were raising the first decade of the 2000s when they were single digits. And so we got an iPod eventually, and we actually told our kids, this is called a WePod. Because we didn't like the individualized nature of a lot of this technology. And so we said, this is the WePod, and we can use it to listen to music together, but we don't listen on headphones. And practically what this means is every time we were in the car, we ended up talking with our kids, sometimes listening to music and talking about it, or maybe just listening. But, you know, we would have these conversations, and they would last for 3 minutes if it was just like around the corner, or 30 minutes it was like to a doctor's appointment or something. And it's that sheer accumulation of time in which, and by the way, the drive to Maine, even from Boston where we were living back then, was 4 hours. Now it's 12. And we did that with the kids a bunch of years. We moved further away and we still did that 12-hour drive because we came to love Maine so much. And like 12 solid hours in the car. I mean, you're tired by the end. You feel that frazzled, terrible, like I've been sitting in a car too long feeling.
Yes.
And you've also had these conversations you'd never get to any other way. And it's the accumulation of those and the fact that our kids now love to keep loving to talk with us every weekend. We have Crouch Family Zoom, and they're in two very different parts of the country right now, and Timothy with his spouse, Sophia. And the fact that we learn to talk to each other is definitely it's definitely the best thing. By clearing things out, you know, because it's so easy. Your life is busy. And as kids get older, and you get into that kind of carpooling and shuttling stage of life, like it's just easy to be very busy. And it's very reasonable for the kid to get in the car and just put on the headphones. And I'm so glad we had all that time to talk. Things we didn't do so well. Well, I mean, the number one, like, misuser of screens in our house was me. I got a laptop computer. I mean, like, if you saw the first laptop I owned, you would start laughing out loud. It was like a Toshiba something something. It was like,
did it have the like little red dot in the middle that was like for the, you know what I mean? Like,
that was
like the mouse or something. Yeah. Never mind.
That's the ThinkPad. Yeah, that's a much later, more advanced form of technology than the one I had the first time.
That's even.
Oh, you can't even imagine. You cannot, Brooke. You look extremely young, and
I'm 38. Yeah. So I mean, I still.
Oh man, you were not even born when Toshiba dreamed up this laptop that I'm on. I have always loved to be on the cutting edge of tech. The first thing I thought I would do as a kid was I'd be a computer programmer when I grew up. I loved it, and I've always adopted this stuff. And then I've always worked largely from home in the different jobs that I've had. And so work was always with me. Screens were always with me. As more screens were invented, like, oh, wow, there's a smartphone. Oh, you know, I didn't buy the first generation. I definitely bought the second. I had like Blackberries and Palm Pilots. And
oh, yes.
And I was inaccessible to my family so much of the time when I should have been accessible. And I definitely know that hurt for them. And, you know, abuse and violence, which sometimes we lash out, and there's a physical form, but there's also a verbal form. It's hurtful. It can be very traumatizing, of course, but indifference and neglect hurt in a different way. And when you realize, your kids have just kind of adjusted to the disappointment. Like, dad's really not here. He looks like he's here. He's in the house, but he's not really here. Or he's not really here for me. And when you realize your kids have internalized that disappointment, which I often hid, it was often because I was hiding behind a screen. That is very tragic. And you know, we've recovered from whatever the worst of that was. And we have such amazing relationships, actually, with our three kids now. But I know I took us on detours. And then we made some mistakes about, like, when they got screens and where they carried them. And it took us a while to figure out all the stuff that's in the book. I mean, yeah, it took us a while to figure out no screens in bedrooms. It took us a while to figure out an 11-year-old should not have an always-on connection to the internet. I say us, but my wife, like, she knew all along. And when we got my son an iPod Touch, which was like the iPod, or, you know, the iPhone without the phone part.
Yep.
And in retrospect, much better to get on a phone and not get the other things than to get all the other things and not a phone, right?
Yeah.
And I got it for him as a reward for like finishing a really tough thing. And I was like, Timothy, if you finish this, you know, amazing project, I'll get you an iPod Touch. And it arrives and Catherine's like, what have you done? Oh. And yeah, a year later, we were like, oh, that was a mistake. Oops. You know, so anyway, some regrets. Net, we're just grateful for the grace that everyone was able to extend to each other and everybody's learned a ton, but, lots of misfires and missteps, most of them by me,
I appreciate your humility, vulnerability. I mean,
it's just the truth.
I can relate. I think any parent listening, especially, or you can relate with that, right? Like that we sometimes sabotage our own ideals or don't even fully understand what's actually happening when we don't live in that stuff. I'll be curious. You said, you know, there's anger and there's, you know, abuse. How did you say the other part again? I don't want to mess it up because it was great, but neglect
and indifference.
So tell me more. Could you just tell me a little bit more about that? Cause I actually think we have a generation suffering from that. You know, I really do.
Yeah.
So I would love to just maybe we're going to go and I have another question.
Yeah.
But I just want to maybe just a little bit further down on that idea of how you see that impacting or just a little more on that, whatever direction you want to take it.
We want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2024. Last year, over 600 mothers gathered together to learn, to worship, both to encourage and to be encouraged. The Father spoke and the Spirit moved and Jesus healed. And it was so incredible that we cannot wait to do it again. We want to invite you October 3rd through 5th here in Bend, Oregon, where we live. We know that the journey of motherhood is both beautiful and it is hard. It is both life-giving and exhausting at times. And we just want to create space for the Spirit to refresh you in your journey. We're going to lean in to how motherhood so gently and beautifully leads us in the way of spiritual formation. We're going to talk about how we need each other on the journey. We're going to talk about how our connection with God ultimately impacts the connection that we have with our kids. This retreat is both for mothers who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers, and anywhere in between, because the truth is we all need each other. We need to learn from each other, and we need to be together. It was Dallas Willard who said, if you don't come apart for a while, you will come apart in a while. And that is especially true for us mothers. So we just invite you to come away with us. Let's see what the Spirit wants to do, and we can't wait to see you.
Well, it crystallized for me recently. I've been we've been doing some work at Praxis with people who work in the foster care world and the care of kids who often kind of by definition, if they're in this system, some pretty tough things have happened.
Okay.
And one of the things that has just been much clearer as I've talked with people who spend their lives like caring for kids and families in the system is some kids go into the system because of abuse, which, you know, it takes various forms and can be easily identified in a way. But actually the majority of kids are there because of what's more broadly classified as neglect. And sometimes the system actually is too quick, I think, to classify things that way or too quick to take kids away in that situation. But I was talking with a psychologist who works with kids, and she said, actually, the kids who experienced abuse there are very clear pathways to healing, and they do require care and counseling and time, but there's pathways to healing. She said it's much harder if you just felt like no one noticed you. And she said the much more difficult thing and much more intractable thing to help a child recover from, or as they grow into young adulthood to like reintegrate and deal with from their childhood experience, is it's not when they were, when someone was hitting them, it's when no one was noticing them. And because when someone's really mad at you and even being violent towards you, at least their attention is focused on you. But when there's no one attending to you, that is in some ways more disintegrating for a human personality than a lot of forms. I'm not, I certainly hope it doesn't sound like I'm minimizing violence or abuse or trauma, but there's this deeper thing. If you just feel like no one ever sees me, no one ever notices me. And I never hit my kids. We chose not to use physical discipline. We're not in principle against it, but we found ways that worked for our kids, at least, that we never had to use it. And it's not too often that I was like verbally, you know, I mean, there are moments when I used a tone of voice that was violated. It violated their dignity. You know, it didn't treat them as whole human beings. But that was rare. But I absolutely think my kids had to deal with my absence while present. I traveled a lot. I speak quite a bit. My jobs have often, I worked for a long time for an organization in Chicago. I had to be out there. And actually, I don't think my kids minded that I traveled at all. What really hurt was when I was in the house, but not at home. Wow. And this is also very hard for my wife, of course. And gosh, it took a long time to like reckon with, wow, I have got to learn how to be present. And I still have a long ways to learn, to go in learning that.
Well, I think there's so many listening that are relating with you, because what you're sharing is just even part of the human experience, I think, right now. A lot of people aren't meaning to do what you're talking about, but yeah, that's kind of a byproduct of not being, of not being present. So it's kind of like the default.
And we have these absence-inducing devices that turn our attention elsewhere and that say something more important than the people you're with is happening right now. And it's designed just for you. You know, it's like customized for you. And the power of the algorithm to suck you in and say there's something more interesting happening on this glowing thing than is happening with the other people around you is very real. I mean, for my daughter's book, we did a number of different kinds of research, but one of the things was an open-ended question for teenagers where we asked, if you could change one thing in your relationship with your parents, what would it be? And it's actually a really interesting thing. Like, if you have kids that age, think like, what would they say? Well, the number one answer is, I wish my parents would spend less time on their phones and more time talking to me. That's what the kids hope from their parents. So part of my big premise with TechWise Family and the life we're looking for is this is not a kid's, people often frame it as a kid's problem. Like, oh, the kids are always on their phones. I'm like, no, have you seen the parents? The parents are always on the phones. And the kids have kind of adapted, but they're not happy about it. And they would love for it to be different. The kids would, but they've sort of resigned themselves. Yeah, mom's on her laptop a lot, or dad's on his phone a lot. And they sort of reset their expectations a lot lower.
Wow. So many things there. My one question before we move on to the other question, what are some of the things that you have outside of being aware? Because obviously seeing it is super helpful. You know, if you can talk about it, you have language, you know what's happening. That's a huge win. But outside of just being aware of the fact that maybe that was your MO for a while, what are some of the steps that you've taken to get out of that world? And that might be highly practical. It might actually just be more reassuring of those that you're around. But what are maybe some of those couple practical things before we go to the next question?
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
I mean, the big thing, insofar as there are these kind of quasi-addictive alternatives to being with the real people God's given me to love, like minimizing their proximity to me when I'm with the people I'm called to love. So not carrying the laptop onto the living room couch to just, you know, I'll just check my email while I chat with my wife. Like, why do I think that's a good idea? You know,
it doesn't work. Yeah, you're right.
Plugging the phone in the kitchen. And if you need to check it, walk over to it and check it, but leave it like tethered rather than sort of walking around with you. I mean, I don't wear an Apple Watch outside my home because I just like being lower tech when I'm out side, but actually I wear one around the house so that notifications I can get without having this like all-encompassing absorbing thing that I find the watch to be much more much less disruptive of my relationships. I can still get notified if I need to, if, you know, whatever. So like minimizing the glow. By the way, I have this theory that I cannot prove, but I think there's something to it, that we are not prepared for things that glow. So if you think about it, through all of human history, what glows, and that is what generates its own light in the natural world, there's basically one thing, which is fire. And when you think about when you're sitting by a campfire or a fireplace, there's something mesmerizing about the light that emanates from a fire, right? Now, of course, the sun glows, but it's too bright to look at. Everything else in the natural world is reflected light. It's the sun's light reflected, basically, or the firelight reflected, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think when we suddenly introduced into our sensorium these things that glow on their own, the other thing in nature is it's called different things in different parts of the even this country, glowworms or fireflies. So fireflies are mesmerizing. You're like, oh my gosh, it's like sending out a little signal. And I think we are not neurologically prepared for transmitted light rather than reflected light. So that if I've got and you could actually kind of run this experiment, like if we were together in person and I also had a camera on you, and I had like a, like, you know, sometimes when you're filming something, you have the person and then you have an image of them on a screen taken by a camera. I will tell you, I've been in many settings like this, and what I notice is my eyes are drawn to the you on the screen rather than the real you. The glowing you. The glowing. And this is why when you're in a restaurant that has a TV, like you can have every intention in the world. Like I'm going to it's date night. Like here we are. Oh, but there's the ad for like a car or something. Like I don't even care about that. But the glow. So minimizing the glow, minimizing the distraction from the glow. Like that goes way further than any good intentions in our house. So we never have anything glowing at the dinner table. Certainly. We try to minimize it in our common areas, and we kind of have it at the places where we work, because these are useful for work and they're useful for logistics. And if we have family logistics, we pull out the screens and we do that quickly and then we put them away. So that's been the best thing. Just keep it in its proper place, which is not like next to your relational environment.
Yes. I mean, it's so simple, but profoundly powerful. I mean, I cannot underestimate. I mean, I know for me a handful of years ago, and I think a lot of it was from reading TechWise Family, but it's like you come home and your phone has a place. I'm not sure if you've heard of Aro or the Aro box.
I love Aro.
Elizabeth and I were just on their podcast, my wife and I, and it comes out, and you know, we got introduced to them through some friends and then jumped on their podcast. They sent us one of the boxes, and I am telling you, it's just great. I mean, it's just a very practical, stylish box that you put your phone in, it charges, it has a home, the whole thing. But I mean, even before that, having a nice, perfect curated box for it, just having a place for your phone to where you have to go check it. I was just absolutely surprised how just doing that one thing was actually immensely helpful just to not have it on your person. So I really appreciate you going there, and thank you for even just sharing that part of your life and story. Really appreciate that. Back to the life we're looking for. So that's kind of the TechWise family. There's so many things we could go on that, but I did want to just talk about a few things that I think are very helpful for anybody listening. In the life we're looking for, you talked about this. I'm sure people ask you about this often, but the superpower zone. I'd love to talk about that, because again, I think when I read your stuff, what comes to my mind every time is, man, Andy thinks deeply about stuff. I get that impression. And you obviously already admitted to it. So you already told on yourself, but even just the concept of the superpower zone was just, it's similar to the whole glowing thing you just said. Brilliant.
Yeah. It's related.
But I mean, that was just brilliant. You should really think about being a comedian, because most comedians are just masters of the obvious, right? Like you just got to get a punchline to that and you're done. You have a third or fourth or fifth career.
Got a bit.
Yeah. Anyway, but tell me about the superpower zone, because I think there's a lot of stuff about that that made sense, and maybe just set up what it is and where you came to it.
Yeah. So this is something technology gives us that, frankly, human beings really have never had before. They've dreamed of it. We've dreamed of it all along, but now we kind of have it. And it's one way to put it is it's effortless power. And it's the ability to have something happen with almost no effort on your part, and especially something dramatic happen. So maybe I can contrast two ways of being on two wheels. So I spend about 20 miles a day on my bicycle, on a bike. That's my next thing after we finish talking, actually.
Oh, good.
And so I'm out, and when you're on a bicycle, it's not an electric bike. It is a old fashioned bike where I have to move my legs in circles. And when it's up a hill, it's pretty hard. And then you get the like delight of going downhill, but every downhill is purchased by an uphill. Right. So it's power matched to effort. And in fact, it develops, of course, you know, strength, and it's good for my body, but it's really good for my heart and my mind and my soul also to be out on my bike, which is why I make it a priority every day. Now, I'll sometimes be out on my bike, and I totally get why they do this, but there's other people who are on two-wheeled vehicles where all they have to do to go much faster than me is like twist one of their hands, because they're on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And often they'll be you know how the bike's kind of going slowly in the right side and the car is coming on, so you have to kind of wait. And then the motorcycle like has a chance to pass me. And, you know, you hear the engine roar because they're like twisting. Yeah. Here we go. Right. And as they zoom by, you can just feel how exhilarating it is to be them. Right. Because they're sitting. They're just sitting.
You're right.
Do I resent motorcyclists? Very minimally. I understand, because I have my own versions of this. It's actually, we've all felt it. Anyone who drives a car, and anyone who like enjoys driving a car and likes like power in a car. Not everybody likes that, but I'm guessing maybe you and I are the kind of people who, on a nice straight piece of road where it's safe and so forth, man, when you can just press that accelerator and it just goes, you're like, whoa, this is amazing. Yes. And when you are experiencing that, you are in the superpower zone. And because the superpower is defined by an excessive kind of result with a minimum of effort, and it's part of the exhilarating thing of it is just moving your toe a little bit against the accelerator can have such an amazing effect, and you don't have to do hardly anything. And underneath this is the dream of what human beings have always called magic, which magic is you say a few words or you wave a wand and amazing things happen that you don't have to like exert yourself to create.
Yeah.
And, you know, the modern technological world is actually full of these things. So I want to talk with Brooke today. Well, it used to be that to do that, I had to move myself through the natural world until we were in the same place. And even if you're just my next door neighbor, you know, we still have to get up out of our chairs, go, you know, walk down the street. But if you're on the West Coast and I'm on the East Coast and we decided, hey, we really need to meet, we would then go to a huge amount of effort. Like think really, truly pre-technological. We'd get a horse. We'd get a wagon. We'd make like a year-long plan.
Yeah, it'd be a year-long journey.
it would be a massive commitment. Now, imagine how that would change what it would feel like to meet in the end. If we decided, you know, there's something we need to do together or talk about, or, you know, I don't know. We would have put so much into it that it would change the nature of the encounter whenever we met. Well, of course, now we just open up a Zoom window and click a button. You and I, we're perfectly still. We've exerted nothing. No strength has been used. We actually have no idea how it works, right? It's not like we're using our mind. It's not like, wow, okay, let me code a like telecommunications interface. No, I just like open up the Zoom app and 99% of the time it works.
Yeah.
And this, without us knowing it, it accustoms us to the idea that the most rewarding experiences are ones that involve no skill, no effort, and that don't actually change us. And well, they don't change us actively. I think they do change us to become more and more accustomed to being passive, because as much as you feel very alive, and the motorbike, you know, is a relatively engaged way of being out on the road. But if you're in like a Lexus, you know, it has 300 extra pounds of sound insulation built into the, you know, the doors, you are amazingly cocooned, and yet you just whisk along. And it kind of teaches you, oh, the good life is not the effortful life, not the invested life, but the paid for, you know, you do have to buy this experience, but the paid for experience of just being able to kind of decide you want something and go. And I don't think it's all bad. I drive a car that has a pretty good torque, like a pickup off the line. And I'll sometimes nearly floor it if there aren't passengers who would get sick. And it's a great feeling, but I don't want my life defined by that, which is why every day I'm out on my bike, because I want to remember, like, the best experiences actually come with the shaping of my body, but not just my body, my heart and my mind and my soul as well.
Oh, I have so many thoughts. I recently, here's the most surface one. I was recently, my friend got a Rivian and like, yeah, let me take you in this thing. I was like, it was bizarre. It was faster than any roller coaster I had been on. It was exhilarating to the point of, like, this is problematic. Like, you know, you for so many reasons, like the car accident, the getting a ticket, the breaking the law. The fact that you could at any point just be on a roller coaster, that doesn't seem so great to me as far as, like, my personality. I would abuse it quick. So anyway, that was incredible. That's my first thought. My other thought that is completely in the middle is, you mentioned motorcycles, you mentioned bicycles, but let's talk about e-bikes. You know, I thought you were going to go on e-bikes. Yeah. E-bikes are funny because they're that weird, like, hey, try a little, but if it gets too tough, we got you. You know what I mean? Like, don't try too hard. Exactly. We wouldn't want you. So, I mean, it's funny because technology even sometimes tries to, like, beckon back to the user, even like yourself, that would be like, well, you know, Andy, sometimes those hills are hard and, just give it a little kick.
Haven't I earned a little boost? I just need a little boost.
Oh, well, totally, 20 miles a day. That's incredible. But I think maybe just stretch that out a little bit for me, because I'm starting to connect all the dots. I think you did a great job of connecting the dots in the book too, but just connect a couple of those dots. Like, okay, so that's the idea that we get used to, this idea of not having to put a lot of effort to have a different level of reward or, you know, minimal physical, emotional exertion to get a lot. Stretch that out. What does that end up doing to our families, to our relationships? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a better question. What's at stake?
No, that's so right. So the problem is, it's not with any individual moment of that exhilaration. It's with the pattern that says you don't have to change and you don't have to be formed in order to be happy, really. And the problem is, well, there's two problems, I suppose. One is that there's diminishing returns to superpowers. So, even the Rivian or whatever, I mean, and my car is a Tesla, which is it's a great piece of engineering, and I'm grateful for it in a lot of ways, but the effect wears off, or to put it another way, you need more and more, a higher and higher dose to get the same effect.
Sure.
It is a form of addiction, because we're not designed for easy. And so while we find easy very sort of delightful, it doesn't satisfy us in the long run. And so you have to kind of keep upping one way or another the superpower effect. And it's a bit of a treadmill that you end up on that leads you, I think, eventually into kind of misallocating the resources of your life, you might say. But the deeper thing is, it's always substituting for and interfering with the formative things that will actually make you truly, deeply happy in the long run. And so much of life, and this is very applicable to marriage and parenting, is a choice between happy now or happy later. And the happies aren't the same. The happy now that I can have is quick satisfaction of some desire, really. The happy later is the transformation of my relationships and my desires, such that I actually want a different thing. And I have become the kind of person who can actually receive as a gift a much deeper, better life than I can make for myself. And that life that is the formed Andy, or that marriage that will only show up. So my wife and I are 30 years in, and you know, what will it feel like to be married for 50 years? Will it be tedious and kind of a pain and we can't wait for it to be over? And the honest truth is, for many couples, they can end up there. Or will it be what hopefully we've all witnessed in some married couple, which is, oh my gosh, how did they get to 50 and love each other so much? The way they got there was not by happy now. It was through hard now and happy later, and a different kind of happy, a better kind of happy. And the superpower zone is both like in the moment, like I'm either out on my motorcycle or I'm out of my bicycle. And I'm not saying it's wrong to have a motorcycle. And it's certainly a practical form of transportation too, for people who need to get somewhere. You know, I'm not anti any of this stuff, but I don't want it to become the pattern, and I don't want it to substitute. And this is what all of these things, they substitute. So social media substitutes kind of quick, super, it's like relational superpowers. I mean, among other things, one of the most elemental parts of relationships is, how am I doing with you? Like, do you like me? Social media tells you, it gives you like numbers of how liked you are, how popular you are. And that's a superpower, to know what other people feel. But it's also very intoxicating and very distorting. Whereas if I just am in a relationship with my neighbor or my friend or with you, and I just have to learn with you what it is to like stay together and kind of solidarity together and to like each other when we're not likable and all that stuff. Social media won't help you do any of those things. And every minute you're spending in that superpower zone is not a minute that you're spending pursuing growth. So the deep thing that's at stake is that we are not the persons we're meant to be right now. And the only way we'll become them is by submitting ourselves to both like in a way, an effortful and also a kind of abandoning of magic. Like there's a component of effort and there's a component of humility that the super power zone never gives you.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
I have so many follow-up questions, but for sake of time, I'm going to ask one more brief one. Get the book, The Life You're Looking For. At the end, you give great practical hope. We don't have to go into it now. I'll just say, everyone get the book. It talks about exiting the empire, talks about the whole thing. It's really great. And I would say get that resource. The thing I want to just ask as we close is, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things, family, technology, superpower, all these different parts of our life. I would just love to know, as we're leaving this conversation, what is just something that you would want anyone listening to know out of some of the stuff you said or some of the stuff you've been processing? It can be on topic, it can be off, but what's something that you've either been processing in this conversation or outside of this that you're like, you know, this has been a really helpful thing recently, and I just want to pass that along?
Well, you know, what comes to mind is something that I cannot guarantee will happen, but it's a hope I would want to hold out. I do want to say, so we have Timothy's 27. I hope I'm getting these numbers roughly. I'm sorry. I'm very male in certain respects. Like I have in round numbers, I know how old my kids are, but in exact dates, that's outsourced to my wife, Catherine. So we got a 27-year-old, we have an almost 24-year-old, then we have a daughter-in-law who's 26, 27. And the joy of watching, you know what? So I was actually going to say the joy of how connected we are to them is amazing. And, and I'll say a little more about that in a moment. Although I think actually what eclipses that is the joy of seeing them take risks because of Jesus. Like our kids, whether it's getting married, which is the biggest risk in some ways any human being will ever take, or my daughter just choosing making a tough decision about where to move and doing it just prayerfully and going to a place where she really believes God's calling her without being certain of a lot of things. Watching my kids take risks that require them to grow. And it is the best thing. And then, and it actually involves a disconnection from us. I mean, this is the mystery of parenting, is that we invest so much in these children. And when they're young, they run to us and they need us. And then there's this awkward period where they kind of both want us and don't want us.
Yeah.
And then we launch them and we let them disconnect in certain ways. And yet then they still want to know us. And I have been in so many restaurants with young parents with small children, and I totally understand why the small children have screens, so that they will be quiet, so mom and dad can either just have quiet or can talk. And I totally get it. But I always want to say to those parents, I totally understand why they've done what they've done, but I want to say, I just want you to know, you could be in this restaurant, say 10 years from now, 10 to 15 years from now, with your teenage or like 20-year-old children, and have them totally engaged with you and wanting to talk with you and sharing their lives with you. And the path to that doesn't continue on the path you're on, because the path you're on is disconnection, disinterest. I don't really know my parents anyway. The most interesting people in my world are on my screen, not in my presence. And yes, it'd be so much harder right now to have that two or four-year-old like sitting at the table, and you probably wouldn't even be in the restaurant at all. Frankly, you'd be at home and it would be a mess, and it would be like tater tots. And, you know, it would be harder now, but there's this amazing future, relational future. And I want to say, I can't promise this. We have friends who made amazingly beautiful choices, and their children have chosen to walk away from many things their parents valued. And it's just not guaranteed.
Yeah.
But even those folks know love, even in loss, that you don't know until you take this risk of the harder way. So I just want to hold out hope, especially for people listening, and who knows, maybe for you guys, where in the moment you're like, oh, this is hard and we're not sure it's working, because we felt that way many times. And it was true. It was hard and it wasn't always working. That there is a rescue and a grace and an opening up of relationship that will mature as your own children mature and as you mature. And gosh, I'm just getting to taste it now. And it's I hear grandchildren is a whole nother level. We're not there yet. Like short of that, it's the sweetest thing. And but it came after so many hard things. And that's just, it's happy now or happy later. So
Oh, Andy, you've given such that to give that perspective at the end. What a gift, because, you know, you are in a space where you can actually, you're on a higher hill, so to speak. You have binoculars or a telescope and you're like, guys, don't worry. I see it. I know you can't see it because you're down the hill, but like, it's here, it's coming, you know? And I even know that's for Elizabeth. And I also think it's for many listening, just to remember those hard moments. They're worth it. And to also just, again, I think I said this earlier, you're giving permission. And I think so many parents know what they want to do, even instinctually. The Spirit, I think, even leads us a lot of the time to say, especially when you're walking in the Spirit and walking with Jesus, he gives us a nudge in what to do. But I also think we need healthy models of people that give us permission to go, no, you can do the hard thing. Like, doing the hard thing now is actually going to be better. And I know, because I actually had to do it, you know? So what a great way to end us. Andy, I couldn't be more thankful and more happy with our time. So thank you just for your deposit into me personally today, but also to everyone listening and all your work that you're doing. Keep it up. I can't wait to continue to press into not only what you're working on, but how God's wired you. And you're doing some really beautiful things in the world. So thank you for using it for the kingdom and not just for your own gain. It's a huge gift.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks so much.
Yeah.